This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stacio. In 1999, flooding from Hurricane Floyd nearly destroyed Princeville, North Carolina. 16 inches of rain poured down in one day, breaking the dam and flooding the town. Nobody knew for sure if Princeville would recover, but it did. That was the good news for this historic place. Princeville is the oldest town formed by African Americans in the country and one of the first established by people freed from slavery. Its survival is heroic and symbolic, but now it faces a new threat, and it's an internal one. Last July, the state stepped in and took control of Princeville because of financial trouble, and that is only the fifth time the state has ever done such a thing in the past 70 years, the second time they've done it in Princeville. And an audit of the town now shows that two top officials may have misspent town money. The irregularities are adding up. The State Bureau of Investigation is taking a look. Joining us now to talk about this case is Gernal Scott. He's Assistant News Director at WUNC. Gernal, welcome. Good to have you here.
Thank you, Frank.
Also with us, Rudolph Knight, a columnist for the Daily Southerner in Tarboro. Rudolph Knight, good to have you here as well.
Thank you for having me.
Gernal, what's the latest this past week in Princeville?
Well, it's come down to basically a war of words between the state auditor, Beth Wood, and the current mayor of Princeville, Mayor Priscilla Everett Oates. As you said, Princeville, historically significant for many reasons, even in the financial respect, that it's been taken over twice by the state in only five times that that's been done in the state of North Carolina's history. What the state auditor's investigation alleges is that Mayor Oates spent beyond the town's means. A credit card that a town credit card that she had $13,000 of expenditures on it. 8,000 of that, the state auditor says, was not accounted for by any kind of means of receipts, a paper trail, anything like that. The mayor continues to deny that any kind of misspending went on. Her attorney says that this may be some kind of witch hunt by the state against the mayor and the town. So that is where we stand as far as this war of words between the mayor and the state.
And that would be an investigation that might lead to a fraud investigation. What was it that led the state to take over the city's finances?
Well, it's mainly because the state overspent its means.
Do you mean the state or do you mean Princeville?
Princeville itself overspent its means. At one point, the town had $1,000 in its operating account, a town that had a $1.2 million budget. Even for a small impoverished town like Princeville, that much of a budget and that little money indicates to the state that there's some kind of mismanagement going on, and they chose to investigate. They began getting calls in July of 2010 saying that there was mismanagement going on, and it took 2 years for the local government commission, an office within the state auditor's office, to investigate and say, look, we need to go in and seize these books and find out why this has happened.
Rudolph, give us a sense of the history of this place. We pointed to some of it, but give us a bigger idea. The history of Princeville?
The bigger idea of Princeville, and we look at it being self-supporting, self-sufficient, self-governed. And from 1885 up until 2010, that this was the case. Princeville had its own police department, it had its own fire department, had its mayor and its town commissioners, and they ran through those years, they ran the town pretty smoothly with a limited budget, sometimes no budget. There are many instances that I've been told where the late Martha Baker, who was a member of the Matheson family that lived in Princeville, loaned the town money to keep them from going into the red. So the bigger picture, I think, is that with Princeville started in 1865 as a community, it was incorporated in 1885, that it started out as an experiment when Turner Prince, one of the founders, Abraham Wooten, and several others had Robert Taylor, who was a senator representing Edgecombe County, to introduce a bill for the town to be chartered. It started off as an experiment, but it ended up to be an experience. And so almost 128 years, it has done an adequate job up until this point.
What kind of an experiment? What was the? What were the founding principles of
Princeton? Well, we have to look at the times that we were in during Reconstruction. There were a lot of doubts about the freely slaves being freed. There were some people of that were free of color that was involved. But I think that during that Reconstruction, General Assembly, those sessions during that time, that perhaps the whites thought that maybe this would not last. Let's just see what would happen. And it was successful. There were several internal attempts to take the charter away, and that was one in 1900 with Jake Peel, and it was supported by a black merchant, Owen James, in the town. That was unsuccessful, and that's the only other instance that I know that there was an internal, and there were internal factors to cause the town some problems. There have been several external factors with flooding, with just political activities. We look at when Jim Crowism came in 1898, and we are familiar with that Wilmington situation, and that just spread it out. But Princeville weathered. You look at World War One, you look at World War Two, you look at the migration of blacks north. Princeville was affected, but it still remained intact.
Well, I'd like to know a little more about that, because you can see how Princeville would be formed and at the very least be left alone in the immediate aftermath of the Civil War. When Jim Crow takes root in this state, as it did, what was the effect on a town like Princeville?
Well, we go back to the initial beginning of Princeville. It was a good arrangement for the white population in Tarboro. You needed workers in various jobs. So socially, blacks could come across the bridge, work during the day, go back to their homes, to their own community at night. They had their own stores, had their own barbershops, beauty parlors, had everything that they needed. So out of sight, out of mind for the white community. So it was a area for protection. Now, Princeville's land that it was settled on was mostly swamp land. The Colonial Road ran beside the river, but as we know Princeville today, that did not exist before 1865. So people were not familiar with that land. You never go in to the enemy not knowing where you're going. So there was protection. There were several instances, just two that I know of through my research, of the Klan threatening Princeville. But nothing came of that because of safety in numbers.
Grinnell, that's lowland, the topographic feature of Princeville, certainly played an important part in what happened during Hurricane Floyd.
Absolutely. In 1999, when Floyd struck, like you mentioned earlier, 16 inches of rain in a day. The Tar River overflows at banks, and the town is flooded for several days, and it had to come back from that. They didn't even know if the town could come back from that. There was even one point that they voted to perhaps think about dissolving the town because they didn't know if they could come back from that. But there were divine intervention, you might say, from people outside. Even the pop star Prince contributed money to help this town get back on its feet. And things looked promising until all of the financial issues started.
Yeah, well, so tell me about that, Rudolph. A town like this, with its historic significance, anytime there's allegations of fraud and wrongdoing, that hurts every community. But given the history of this town, what kind of impact do these allegations take?
It has had a great impact throughout our community, throughout the state, throughout the nation, and internationally because of, as I stated earlier, about being an experiment, being an experience. You could hold Princeville up to the world and say, this works. Black people can govern themselves. They can do very well. And it's embarrassing. It's very embarrassing that everyone's focused on Princeville for a negative reason. We are sitting on a gold mine, so to speak, because of tourism. and what you could do with that, and things that have been done in other places to make sure that you capitalize on that tourism. This is very negative, and we need to have that resolved as quickly and as best that we can.
Well, Grinnell, what are the prospects for that? It sounds like you've got a couple of investigations, one involving potential fraud and the other just sort of the solvency of the town, right?
Yeah, absolutely. You look at the latest unemployment numbers that have come out in the state, and you look at the top three. You have Dare County at 18.6%, Swain County at 17.9%, then Edgecombe County, where Princeville is, hovering between 15 and 16%. And Princeville has always been considered an impoverished town. So the future of the town is in question. But this legal fight and this or potential legal fight, should we say, because we know, who knows where this is going to go once all of the allegations have been put out there and everything has been responded to. You wonder if the town can actually come back from this, and with only 2,100 people in the town, it's difficult to say what the future of Princeville is right at this point.
We will stay tuned. I thank both of you for being with us. Grinnell Scott, Assistant News Director at WNC. Rudolph Knight, a history columnist for the Daily Southerner in Tarboro. Thank you both for being on the program.
Very welcome. Thank you.
Coming up, the 50th anniversary of the North Carolina speaker ban at UNC. You're listening to the State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. Please stay with us.